I do think there's an irreducible uncertainty in the sense that once we build machines that are twice, 10 times, 100 times more generally intelligent and capable than humans are, I mean, once we get there, of course, there's a level at which we can't know exactly what's going to happen.
Ben, Elon Musk said AI was more dangerous than nukes, but Bill Gates says that AI is the most important tech advancement in decades. Where do you sit between Elon Musk and Bill Gates?
I think both of those statements are true. And I think the first one, though, needs to be taken in context. I mean, I on the Bill Gates quote, I would say the mathematician I.J. Goode summed it up well in 1965 when he said, the first ultra-intelligence will be the last invention humanity has to make. By an ultra-intelligence, he meant a thinking machine that's much smarter than people. And what I'd add to that is once you've created a real thinking machine that can think as well as people, you're not far from an ultra-intelligence, a super-intelligence that's much smarter than people. Because once you have a thinking machine that can really think like people, that thinking machine can program, it can study computer science, it can study hardware engineering, it can improve itself, and you'll get exponential increase in the intelligence of that thinking machine and its successors, which will be AI created. So no doubt that's the biggest technology in human history. I mean, it may be the biggest event on planet Earth, like going back to the time Earth crystallized out of a ball of fire that spun out of the sun, right? I mean, you're going from evolved intelligence to engineered and then self-re-engineering intelligence. That's a big thing, and there's a lot of issues there, and there's a lot of amazing possibilities there. There's also obviously significant risks, right? So when Elon Musk says, you know, there's more danger in AI than in nukes, sure, but there's also tremendously more promise, and these always go together, right? I mean, you could say in the same way, you know, there's more danger in airplanes than in automobiles, and it's true in a way. You can suicide bomb with airplanes, you can drop missiles with airplanes, and there's more danger in humans than in gorillas and chimpanzees, because, you know, we can build tools and we can build computers and AIs and airplanes, but we can also colonize space, and we're the only species that's going to be able to move the Earth away from the sun before it blows up, right? So I mean, focusing on the risks of AI to some level is intelligent, so that we'll think about how to mitigate those risks in a practical and sensible way. But on the other hand, emphasizing the risks rather than the benefits is also a particular choice. It's a choice Elon Musk has often made, not a choice that I'm making. I would say Elon, of course, is leveraging AI as well as he can within his own enterprises, and is an optimist about getting a full self-driving rolled out in Tesla vehicles, right? So he sees that it's economically important and necessary, but yet he's worried about the long term. And, you know, while I like Elon, I think he's a great visionary in many ways, I'm not sure he's really sat down and thought hard about how to maximize the odds that AI that thinks like people and better, what I call artificial general intelligence, like how do you maximize the odds that AGI does come out well for people. I haven't seen a lot of deep thinking from the Elon Musk angle on the topic of how to achieve beneficial AGI. Obviously, he's a busy guy. He's running a bunch of super impactful companies, though, and it's a difficult matter.
So what would you say most scares you about AI and most excites you about AI?
So I'm not at a gut level. I'm not scared about the medium term future as regards AI. I do think there's an irreducible uncertainty in the sense that once we build machines that are 10 times, 100 times more generally intelligent and capable than humans are. I mean, once we get there, of course, there's a level at which we can't know exactly what's going to happen, right? I mean, science fiction has explored many, many possibilities, and anything could happen. I mean, once the AGI reaches 5 times human intelligence, it may see the super intelligent aliens that have been lurking all around, and we're too stupid to notice them. It may develop backward time machines and go and delete what it perceives as bad things from human history, you know, or maybe nothing all that weird, but merely a paradise on Earth that humans can't understand any better than ants and bugs can understand the New York Museum of Modern Art, right? So, I mean, in a sense, all bets are off when you're talking about massively superhuman intelligence. Nevertheless, at a gut feeling level, at a sort of heart or spiritual level, I have a strong sense this is all going to come out quite well. I mean, what I really think is going to happen is we're going to get AGI, artificial general intelligence systems that can generalize beyond their experience, leap into the great unknown with imagination and reason more powerful than human level. And I think that these AIs are going to, in the end, be loving, compassionate, and helpful to human beings. And humans will be able to merge with these AIs and basically become superminds, or remain humans living in a human setting that will appear utopic relative to how we live now. Like, you don't have to work for a living. You don't have to die unless you feel like it. You don't have to get sick. You can snap your fingers and summon up any organization of molecules that you want, right? So, I mean, I, in the end, I'm very optimistic about the post-singularity world. I think the AGIs we're going to create are going to look back on us nostalgically as their creators, and that helping humans to flourish will take a vanishingly small percent of their resources, very small considering the unique historic and aesthetic value humans would have as their creators. I worry more about the transition from here to that stage, right? So, I mean, suppose, you know, GPT-8 can really obsolete 80% of human jobs, right? And I don't really think it will be a system in the GPT lineage that does that exactly. I mean, and we can talk about that a little later. I mean, I think you're going to need to take this sort of large language model tech and combine it with that other sorts of AI that does better with creative invention and with sustained truth-driven reasoning. But whether it's a GPT system or some sort of more complex AGI architecture like the ones that I'm working on with my colleagues in SingularityNet and True AGI and OpenCog and so on, one way or the other, if you get some AGI system that obsoletes the vast majority of human jobs, which I'm almost sure will happen, and it's not going to be many decades from now, right? So that then what happens in the few years while that transitions into something that's really super intelligent enough? Like, so suppose at some point, suppose drones go around the earth and just airdrop to everyone, you know, Drexlerian molecular nano assemblers that will just listen to your voice commands and 3D print whatever object you want, be it food, shelter, video game consoles, right? So, okay, then you're in one domain. Super AI has created abundance, and the hope is that it's compassionate to people, right? But what happens in between most jobs being obsoleted and the point where molecular assemblers are being airdropped everywhere, right? What happens in between there, and this may not be days, this may be years of transition period, and this is going to be a strange and tortuous journey, right? I mean, I think the rollout of technologies takes time, even when they work. I mean, some friend of mine invented a technology several years ago in a company called Apprente that basically obsoletes that human behind the McDonald's drive-thru or the drive-thru window at other fast food companies. You know, they developed this 3-4 years ago. Their company was bought by McDonald's. It was then changed hands to IBM. It's rolled out in a handful of McDonald's. It's not yet everywhere, though, right? So, I mean, although it works and it's clear that that job could be automated a long time ago, right? So, I mean, that illustrates how it does take some time, even when AI can replace a job category. It takes some time for it to roll out, which is a complex rhythm and pacing that depends on the industry structure, right? So there's going to be several years of step-by-step AI obsoleting job after job in different industries. In the end, I think you're going to see some form of universal basic income roll out in the developed world. But what worries me, among many other things, is who's going to give universal basic income to the average, you know, citizen of the Central African Republic or Senegal, right? I mean, there's not much appetite for that in the West. In China, there's appetite for building superhighways from the mine to the port, but not so much for giving basic income to the people in Africa. So you've got potential for temporary exacerbation of the gap between haves and have-nots globally, which is always something that can exacerbate all sorts of instability. So I'm somewhat worried about that transition period, less so than about the end game. And I think somewhere in that rant, I answered your second question also, which is what excites me most, right? I mean, there's two pieces. You know, one is, it will be great to be a superhuman supermind with effectively godlike intelligence and capability, even if it meant giving up being human in the traditional sense. It'd be great to have the option to merge with an AGI supermind. It would also be great, you know, to live a human life without headaches, stomach aches, old age and death and the need to worry about paying your bills at the end of the month, right? I mean, we are living better in a material and medical sense than we have in all of human history, but there's a lot of room for improvement, right? And I think if you're really looking to a situation of superhuman AGIs, there's no reason you couldn't make multiple copies of yourself. Like Ben 1 stays on Earth in the human body that never gets sick and dies, and like hikes all possible trails, learns all languages, plays all musical instruments, and so on. Then Ben 2 fuses with the AI supermind. And what's interesting about Bill and Elon is I think Elon Musk sees that long-term upside very, very clearly, whereas Bill Gates has been a little more grounded in near term in his thinking. On the other hand, Elon Musk seems to have, let me say, less faith in human nature and in the benevolence and compassion of human society as it shapes the young AGI minds. And probably his experience policing Twitter hasn't improved his impression of the benevolent streak of human nature.
There's about three questions that have come out of that answer, Ben. I definitely want to talk about universal basic income, because that sort of control over the monetary system really scares me, quite frankly. Definitely want to talk about jobs. But first, I want to talk about singularity, because you know, many people who listen to the Disruptor Show are entrepreneurs, and they may not know what the singularity is. So sure. Could you give us a little overview of what it is, when you think it'll happen, and again, what excites you and scares you about the singularity?
The technological singularity is a notion that was first explicitly articulated by the science fiction writer Werner Vinge, and was then really popularized by futurist Ray Kurzweil. You could look in his book, The Singularity is Near, or much earlier book, The Age of spiritual machines. And, you know, the mathematician Ajay Good, who I studied at the beginning of this interview, he articulates something called the intelligence explosion, which is a closely related concept. The intelligence explosion is a point when machines make smarter machines, which make smarter and smarter machines, which make smarter and smarter machines, and zoom, right? The singularity is conceived as a time when new inventions, new technological progress is happening so fast, the pace of advance appears infinite to the human mind. And we're getting there. We're not there yet. But I mean, like I don't have time to figure out all the features of each new phone I buy before a new one comes, right? And you can see that with AI models also, right? I mean, we had GPT-3, we're trying to make sense of what it means, and we get GPT-4, but then, you know, already many teams, including my own AI team, are working on things that are next and even better. And, you know, before the economy has time to adapt to one level of AI, we're going to have the next level of AI. Bing, 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 bing. So when your phone is making 10 Nobel Prize level discoveries every second using its spare processing power, then you're at the singularity, right? It doesn't have to be truly infinite rate of growth, but it has to appear that relative to people. And if you look at the historical research Ray Kurzweil did back in the 90s, he was just plotting, you know, how much faster computers are getting, how much more accurate brain scanning is getting, how much faster networking is getting, how much smaller motors are getting. One thing after another, you see an exponential rate of increase. And based on that, he projected human level AGI would come around 2029. And I mean, I think we might be able to even pull it off faster than that in, say, 3 or 4 years from now. I don't think it's going to be 20 or 30 years from now. So, I mean, I think his analysis was fairly well on target, given that he was making it in the 90s when these things were a little less obvious. But, you know, there have been other visionaries seeing this all along, right? I remember in the early 70s, I read a book called The Prometheus Project from a Princeton physicist, Gerald Feinberg, that was written in the late 60s. I read it when I was 8 or 9 years old. In The Prometheus Project, I found this book in the public library in southern New Jersey. I mean, this physicist from Princeton is saying, you know, within the next few decades, we're gonna develop machines smarter than people, we're gonna cure aging and death, and we're going to be able to manufacture arbitrary, you know, material objects by manipulating molecules at the nanoscale freely. And then our question will be, do we use this to pursue rampant mindless consumerism, or do we use this to enlighten our consciousness? And he proposed the UN put this to a vote of the world population, whether to use immortality, nanotech, and AGI.
If you love to travel like me and you understand the power in escaping the money for time exchange trap, but you just don't know how to do it, then building an Airbnb consultancy business could be exactly what you have been looking for. Right now in the UK, there is a completely untapped opportunity through helping struggling Airbnb hosts by turning around their underperforming properties and generating you huge commission payments in the process. We are going to teach you all of the tools and all of the techniques that we've learned over the last 5 years through building our very own multiple six-figure Airbnb business, arming you with everything that you need to swoop in and save the day. Minimal startup costs, zero risk, and almost unlimited potential. Sound good? Welcome to the Airbnb Consultant. Contact us through any of the channels included in the studio notes to get the conversation started.
For consciousness expansion or mindless consumerism. And so he proposed this in the late 60s, right? So, which I read when I'm 8 years old, I'm like, well, this is way more interesting than things most people around me are talking about now, like is rock better than disco or not, right? So, okay. And the Vietnam War, which was important, but this just seemed way, way, way more important, which seeded my own passion for AI and these futuristic technology. So in a way, we're already in the singularity in the early stages. Things are already happening almost so fast we can barely understand. At least this is the very late pre-singularity era, right? So which is a fascinating time to be alive, and even more fascinating time to be actually building AGI technology like I'm doing with my colleagues.
So Ben, let's talk about AI and jobs, because I imagine through the Industrial Revolution, when the manufacturing and the factory line was created, and maybe Ford could pretty much reduce all the labor and use machines to make a car, there must have been a similar fear of, well, the factory line's going to take away all the jobs. So is there an argument that AI won't take away all the jobs? It will just take lower level or jobs we can currently perceive, but it could create more jobs.
I think that there's an argument for that, but it's a completely wrong argument. So I think we've seen in human history many times, of course, things seemed like they were going to happen, and then they didn't happen, and then they finally happened. And I mean, the invention of technology had that pattern. If you look in the 12th century Chinese encyclopedia, you can see all sorts of complex geared mechanisms and, you know, water wheels and helicopters like the ones Da Vinci later sketched, right? So, I mean, you had a lot of advanced technology in 12, 13, 1400s in China. And then the emperor decided that was bad. He burned a bunch of the books. He burned their boats and said, we're not going to do this, right? So, I mean, advanced, the tech to power the Industrial Revolution almost came, it went away, it almost came, it went away, then it really came, right? And I think this is how human history happens. You have cycles and waves, right? And I think that there have been false alarms about AI taking people's jobs before, and I think we're seeing already this happening in a much more real and concrete way than we saw previously. And the examples are well known and obvious enough now that I don't even need to waste everyone's time repeating them. Like, I mean, there's going to be way, way fewer graphic artists needed to make ads now, right? Because you can go to Midjourney, DALL-E, Stable Diffusion, or whatever the next things are, and you can get cool pictures made, right? Now, yeah, there's job tweaking the prompts to generate the pictures. Now, I think prompt engineering is going to be much less of a thing a year or two from now, because the AIs will get smarter and smarter at understanding just rough informal prompts, and you won't have to tweak the prompts as much. But I mean, that doesn't eliminate all jobs. There's still someone telling the AI what pictures to make, but it needs fewer people, right? And I think that example shows some other aspects also. I mean, there will still be a high end until you have really human level AGI or superhuman AGI, right? I mean, some projects with enough money will want to hire human artists to compete with the AI programs and come up with the absolute best thing, but that's going to be more expensive. So I think McDonald's is another fairly basic example. I mean, throughout Asia, you've already replaced the guy behind the counter pushing the hamburger button with an iPad or Android tablet where you can push the hamburger button yourself. And I mean, why not? It's more efficient. You got more registers then, right? And then the guy behind the drive-thru is being replaced by apprentice technology. So how hard is it going to be to replace that fry cook with just a big metal box where you put garbage in one end and burgers out the other, right? I mean, we can do that already. It's just the cost of assembling the machinery needs to come down, and it is coming down. So, I mean, I think we're not going to see this time what was seen before, which is the jobs taken are replaced by a sort of equivalent number of different jobs. I mean, and I think society is going to have a hard time reacting to that, certainly. And there will be some jobs that will survive this change, even past the singularity, and some that will survive up till the singularity, but not that many. I mean, I think, say, a preschool teacher, a psychotherapist, an elder care worker. There are some jobs that are just based on humans connecting with humans, and that's what they need to be. I don't want my 2-year-old daughter taught only by robots, right? I mean, even though I love AI and robots, like, there's an aspect of humans teaching other humans what it means to be human, right? And interestingly, these are often very poorly paid job categories now. Certainly preschool teacher is, but these may be among the ones to survive the best. I think any job that involves coming up with stuff that's really never been done before and charting a leap into the unknown will survive well. So, I mean, the high end of creative arts and music and, say, Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative journalism, right? I mean, this stuff really needs full-on general intelligence. Or, you know, running a startup to get into something that addresses much of your audience. I mean, running a startup, that's about, at least in a technology sector or any other rapidly changing sector, which increasingly is most, right? I mean, that's about dealing with an unknown, uncharted world and dealing with problems that no one has ever looked at before. And if you just retread stuff that's happened in history, you're going to fail. Someone else is seeing the future in a more visionary way and innovating better, right? So I think strategic leadership is sort of up there with, you know, being the next Picasso or Pulitzer Prize winning investigative journalism. Like, these are things that involve leaping into the unknown in a way. So these things involving creative leaps into the unknown or really fundamental, like, I, thou, human connection, heart to heart, these things will survive, and everything else will be automated bit by bit. As this happens gradually, of course, new jobs are created along the way, but on the whole, there are going to be fewer jobs at each step. Just like you don't need as many hours on prompt engineering as you need on graphic art. And, you know, on the outskirts of Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, where I have an AI development office, there's a big building where a bunch of local Ethiopians assemble shoes to sell in the African market. When that factory is automated, there will be jobs created for engineers who build the machines that assemble the shoes in that factory. But it's going to be fewer engineers than it is shoe assembly people, right? And then when you have machines building the machines, for a while you're still going to have human engineers building the machines that build the machines, but it will be even fewer people. And I think we're already into that wave. One thing that's interesting is in the US right now, a lot of the people who aren't working don't really want to be working anyway. So I think in the younger generation, you see an attitude shift where a lot of people aged 30 here are under, like, well, is working to get money really what I want to be doing with my life anyway? Can I find a way to live in my parents' basement and play Call of Duty instead, or work on the next great American novel or play in a band or whatever it is? And I think you are already in the developed world, you're already seeing a bit of a cultural attitude shift away from defining oneself based on what one does to get money and resources. But again, there's a huge have-nots gap, because the average subsistence farmer in Ethiopia or Senegal or Afghanistan is not in that frame of mind whatsoever, and doesn't seem likely to be till post-singularity.
Two questions that this is fired off in my brain. So I guess you could call me, Ben, a bit more of an old school entrepreneur. I'm 43. I started my own business 17 years ago.
Hey, I'm 56, man. I mean, you're a baby.
You know, I did the hustle and the grind and working 16-hour days and making all the sacrifices. And I see this culture shift.
Yeah, I mean, To be honest, I still am, right? That's what we're going to need to do to bring about the singularity, right? Which includes getting up at 7 in the morning to do someone's podcast before sitting down to work on the AI, right? absolutely. There's a generational aspect here, though. But of course, if you look back further, they're in the late 1800s, how long was the work week, right? For a factory worker, I think there's been a in the Stone Age, people may have worked 2 to 4 hours a day and spent most of the time hanging out with their families, right? And maybe life was easier and happier, but of course happiness has not been humanity's prime goal. We're always trying to leap into the unknown. But I think since the Industrial Revolution, that was a big burst of human overwork, and it's sort of been ramping down in the developed world since then. And part of that is reflecting the generational shift between us and people who are 25 now. Because in our generation, everything was hard, right? You had to work like hell to make anything happen, and then usually it failed anyway, even after you broke your back working day and night for years and years. Usually it completely failed. You had to give up or start over again. And I see, in the current era, that level of persistence and patience is often not needed, because new technologies are just dropping things in your lap so quickly if you happen to be in the more developed and wealthy parts of the world.
Yeah, I think you answered the question before I asked it, but I'm going to ask it again because you might have an add-on.
Yeah.
So I employ a lot of people who are in their 20s, and I see a difference in attitude. And I don't know if it's good or bad for humanity, because I hear you, in generations gone by, maybe we've overworked and that's not good. Mental health issues, fatigue, we might die younger, blah, blah, blah. You know, life isn't just about work. But it also, I worry if we have this big reliability on AI and tech, and we have universal basic income, and not many of us really work, and we've got an aging population and a growing population. And I think we could be a really bloated, lazy society, which I'm not sure that's good either. What are your thoughts on the change of society?
We're already pretty far from surviving by our muscles and our wits, right? When there's a power outage, you feel pretty useless after like a couple of days without power. Like nothing works. What do I do? You can't do like Gilligan's Island and like pedal on a bike to power your house and your laptop and your fridge, right? So I think we're already neurons in the global brain, right? And we're already, as individuals, unable to do what we're used to doing. Without this vast technological infrastructure. I think, due to being a Boy Scout back in the 70s, if civilization collapsed, I'd probably do better than most. I know how to hunt and gather and start fire with sticks and rocks and build a shelter, right? But I don't think it's really going to go that way. I think we're already dependent on this vast global network of technology, and it's going to get more and more and more so as the technology becomes more and more intelligent. And I have the same feeling as you, as an employer of people of various ages and cultures. And I try to ward off becoming like a grumpy old grandpa, right? It's true. People in their 20s, let's say, in U.S., Western Europe, and so forth, it's different in Russia, China, Africa. But people in the most comfortable, most technologically advanced, wealthiest parts of the world who grew up with the internet, right? There's a whole different perspective, and a respect for work-life balance and for self-care and so forth is sort of wired into what people expect, right? And I mean, of course, in our generation, you know, in the U.S., the teachers at school were allowed to whack you with a paddle if they didn't like you. Like it was an entirely different way of growing up and way of thinking. And you know, in Jersey in the 70s, if you worried about self-care, people would just beat the crap out of you. It's an entirely different way of thinking. It was also racist, sexist, homophobic. There's all sorts of nasty stuff was taken for granted back then that we assume we've gone beyond now. So, I mean, overall, I think the world has made tremendous progress in my lifetime. It's been positive. Certainly, so far, there's always been pluses and minuses, right? And you can see that, like going from hunter-gatherer to society to civilization, there's pluses and minuses, because the oneness with nature that you get from living in a hunter-gatherer society is something we obviously still care about. There's like national parks around the world where everyone goes camping and hiking and so forth, but it's not the same, right? There's something we've lost already. There's more that's going to be lost, but there's a tremendous amount gained as well. I think, you know, the worry Elon Musk has is more that we're going to lose everything, because the super AI is just going to decide the molecules used to, you know, comprise human bodies and cell phones and coffee cups and all that, all these molecules we better use to build in a bigger hard drive, right? And I mean, which is what we decide when we build a house. We mow down the ants and bunnies without worrying about it too much, right? So I think there will always be pluses and minuses in almost a progressive step you would take. I mean, even if you're released from jail, you'll miss your friends you had on the inside in prison, right? There's going to be something good in that previous situation that you'll miss, even if you're happy that you've moved on to something better. And that's yin yang, right? That's the way life goes. But I think the worry Elon has is more dire than, like, maybe there's some pluses and minuses to the progress we're seeing. And I think on the whole, I'm an optimist, but I do think there are things we could do to bias the odds toward a more favorable outcome, and maybe the attitude shifts we see with the younger generations towards sort of being kinder, gentler, more health and relationship oriented. This may actually be positive in terms of, you know, boosting the compassion and ethics of the minds of the AIs we're creating. Because, you know, if you look at what AI has been used for so far on the planet before this recent sort of large language model revolution, it's been selling, killing, spying, and what I'd call crooked gambling, aka Wall Street, right? So I mean, it's advertising like Google, it's military and espionage, and it's been, you know, financial systems largely organized to take money from the masses and give them to the top 1%. And if this stuff is what feeds into the mind of the AGI as it grows, like, what kind of AGI are we brewing here? How does it think about its relationships to other minds? Now with ChatGPT, you see interesting twists. So on to selling, killing, spying, and crooked gambling, you have bullshitting, right? So now we have a new angle, which is that AI is just bullshitting people with random garbage that it comes up with by combining things it heard and knows nothing about. So now we have to ask, is selling, killing, spying, crooked gambling, and senseless bullshitting, like, is this what we want in the mind of the first AGIs to be full of? And I mean, not really. On the other hand, things are advancing rapidly. So I think there's still time to make, you know, AIs that have a respect for truth and reason, and that have a compassionate and benevolent attitude toward people. I mean, I think there's still time to shape this the singularity in this way. But what's clear is that neither governments nor large companies fundamentally give a crap about that, right? I mean, governments, by the way they're constituted, care most about their own hegemony and sort of the relative status of their own country relative to the other countries. Companies care more about getting money and getting mind share. And so, you know, who's developing AGI with a view toward the common good of humanity and a benevolent singularity? I mean, in a way, the university system sort of is, which is interesting. And most AI innovations are coming out of PhD students in universities. And I mean, some of us in the entrepreneurial world are, and I've been into blockchain as a technology for making sure AI technology is deployed in a decentralized and more sort of anarcho-democratic way rather than controlled by centralized parties. But it's a small percent of the AI development on Earth that isn't oriented toward let's make these guys money or let's give these guys hegemony, right? I mean, it's most of the resources behind AI are oriented toward making some small or mid-sized party of humans dominant over the others, which probably isn't the way that you want to do it. But if the breakthrough to AGI happens from some crazy people operating outside these oligopolistic institutions, then we still have a better chance at a benevolent singularity, I would say.
Ben, we do a quick fire round on the Disruptor show.
That should be fun. All right.
So, you know, maybe 30 seconds per answer. If there's one or two you want to expand on, fine. Do we live in a simulation?
We cannot know that. My instinct is yes. I thought you wanted rapid answers. That's a yes.
Yeah,
no answer.
Yeah. Yeah. You still got 20 seconds left.
I mean, that's a longstanding philosophy problem, right? And to an extent, you can't ever fully resolve that. If you hack out of this simulation into another one, then you'll ask, is that one a simulation? I would say I think we're rapidly growing beyond the mental framework in which we worry about that. I mean, life is what it is. We see what we see. We do what we do. And you know, whether we live in a simulation or not is kind of irrelevant. I mean, we've always been in this situation where, like, you don't know if you're actually a brain in a vat being fed fake stimuli through wires going into the brain in the vat, right? I mean, anyone who's read science fiction or philosophy has always known we don't know that. We should just get used to it. Like, suck up the fundamental incomprehensibility of life, the universe, and everything, and move on to doing stuff.
Are you playing God if you are programming and creating AI?
We're building God rather than playing God. We're trying to create AGI systems that have superhuman powers, and we're not trying to control what this system does. We're trying to create a system that is a seed for a series of more and more intelligent and capable systems. So we're really trying to build benevolent superminds that have much better sense than me or you or any human about precisely what to do. I'm also specifically not trying to take control of this myself. I mean, I want to seed an AGI process, put it out to a decentralized network that neither I nor any other one person controls, but that is developed by, you know, tens of thousands of developers and millions of contributors in every country around the world. So I mean, I think humanity is building gods, and many of us are playing a part in this, and that's good, because I mean, I'm not religious in the traditional sense. I you know, there may be superhuman superminds out there in the universe already. I doubt a lot that they resemble, you know, Jesus, Yahweh, Allah, and so forth. So I think building gods is a way to make some of the utopian visions underlying historical religions actually realities. Like we literally can create heaven, right? And it's which is amazing, but seems scientifically plausible based on all the physics that we know.
Will AI ever reach human level consciousness?
I suspect AI's level of consciousness will significantly exceed the human level. I tend to be panpsychist, like I believe this coffee cup has its own species of consciousness, and I guess anyone who dropped enough acid probably had that feeling at some point. Like everything is aware. There's a universal mind, or you can get there through meditation or a lot of other methods, right? So if you start from that premise, everything in the universe has its own species of consciousness, you know, then it's not too hard to think, well, okay, sure, AIs will too, but if you have an AI, you know, that's 100 times more intelligent, creative, and capable than a human and knows 100 times more, you know, is it not likely to have a state of consciousness as far beyond human consciousness as human consciousness goes beyond mouse and bug consciousness?
Who controls the world?
No one's in control of the world, man. I mean, that's something I realized when I turned about 9 to 10 years old. I'm like, oh shit, there's really nobody in charge here. Nobody knows what's going on. Like, this is a bunch of monkeys with a jazzed up cortexes and some language ability that are just going around pursuing their own advantage and believing a lot of deluded things. And out of this crazy self-organization thing, things are happening. It was very disturbing to realize that when I was 5 or 6 years old, I believed there was some like ruling class, like 100 guys in suits in a room somewhere who were pulling all the puppet strings. And now I realize nobody's in control. Nobody understands what's going on. Things are just fucking evolving and happening, right? And I mean, that's not to say that some folks don't have more agency than others. I mean, of course, Elon Musk, Bill Gates, or even myself has more agency over the launch of the singularity than the average subsistence farmer, right? But in the end, the global self-organization of communication, computing, and biological and digital life forms, I mean, this goes way beyond any small group of people or any nation. And if half the people or half the countries on Earth were wiped out in some mysterious way, which I really don't think is going to happen, but if that happened, it would be a glitch, right? But I don't think it would delay the singularity by more than decades.
Will AI ultimately wipe out humanity?
I doubt it. I think humanity will persist in the fashion of the squirrels in the national park, as I like to say. I mean, we don't try to police the love lives of the squirrels, and one squirrel can even go ape shit or squirrel shit or whatever and like bite some other squirrels and kill them. They can build their own houses. They live their own lives. If they go out of the park, they might get run over by a car. If a plague befalls the squirrels, some doctors may go in to try to cure it, right? So, I mean, I think humans will continue and AGIs will be much, much smarter than people. A difference from the metaphor of the squirrels in the park is we don't currently offer squirrels the option to uplift their minds to human-level intelligence and join humanity, whereas I think humans will have the opportunity to uplift their minds and merge with the AI supermind. On the other hand, maybe we will offer squirrels the opportunity to uplift themselves to superhuman intelligence later. I don't know. It's been explored in science fiction. The question is, how do you get informed consent from the squirrel, right? Do you have to boost them to human level intelligence, ask them, do you like it, or do you want to go back to being a squirrel in order to ask them the question?
What's your biggest failure, Ben?
What's my biggest failure? Well, I think, you know, if I had foreseeing the dot-com crash in 2001, we might have a human-level AGI and a benevolent human-level AGI right now. So, I mean, I started trying to pursue AGI in the late 90s, right? And you know, I was doing that in New York. It was a great place to be doing it. I built a global company, and you know what we were doing then was well founded on a technical level, but we ended up not pulling it together on a business level, really just because we were hit by the dot-com crash along with anyone else. And I didn't have any business experience back then, whereas now I have decades. But I would also say that Ben Goetzel in his mid-30s was more prone to get carried away with emotions, right? Like, I was just so excited to be in the position of moving ahead super fast with developing AI with a great team. I wasn't able to reflect at a deeper and more sort of dispassionate level on what was going on in the economy and the world around me. And I think that, you know, by this advanced age, I'm less emotion driven and I'm less delusion driven, and I can introspect on each thought and belief I have and compare it in a more dispassionate way with everything in the world that I understand. But if I had gotten to this sort of level of peace of mind and rationality and enlightenment, like, not to overblow things, but if I'd gotten to the place I am mentally now when I was in my 20s, the AI projects I was pulling together in the late 90s probably would have created a benevolent singularity by this point in time. A lot of people who died wouldn't have had to die, right? And we wouldn't have the wars that we have on the planet now. So I think there's a weird sense of responsibility to being engaged with creating AGI, right? And you don't want to overblow it, because you know no one person is that important. If any one of us was to be, you know, hit by a falling meteor, the singularity is still probably going to happen about the same way. On the other hand, could we make it happen with less carnage along the way? Can we make it happen a few years earlier? I mean, that's something that may be within our ability to control. It's about what technology you build, and it's about what mindset you have while you're building it, right? And that's it's a, you know, exciting and also humbling time, going back to the two quotes with which we started out this conversation.
Ben, final question. This show is called Disruptors, and I ask every guest, so 900 times in 7 years, I've asked this same question. What does the word disruptive mean to you?
There's a philosophy of musical aesthetics. So a philosophy or a theory of what makes a piece of music sound good, which is summed up by the phrase, the surprising fulfillment of expectations. So, like, a good piece of music, it's not like totally discordant and gives you something you can't understand that makes no sense based on the earlier bits in the music, but nor is it predictable like Muzak or the more boring works of Kenny G or something, where it's just right. It's throwing something a little surprising at you, but in the end, in a way that fits into the whole big picture of the musical work that's developing. And I think our own development as individuals goes that way. I think the development of industries and economy goes that way. You can see that in Tesla. You can see that in the birth of the PC that Bill Gates was involved in. And so focusing on disruption is important, but it's half of the picture. I think the pattern of growth that we see is, you have surprise, you have disruption. The patterns and expectations you have are, you know, they're thrown into disarray. Then what comes out of that disruption is, you know, something that does fulfill many of the hopes, dreams, and expectations that you had before. And I mean, this is why they called the, you know, the incubator program in University of Toronto the Creative Destruction Lab, which I was advising for some time. That's also creative destruction. It's the two sides. It's a surprising fulfillment of expectations. It's yin and yang. It's the duality between every organism that grows needs to preserve its boundaries, but also needs to evolve into new unforeseen things, right? So I think disruption is half of the picture, but it's one of the important things to be thinking about.
Ben, I want to thank you very much for getting up early and doing this interview. Really grateful, really interesting. You're the first guest we've ever had talking about AI in 900 shows. So hopefully we're going to get.
I won't be the last, I suspect.
So, no. Yeah. So where can people follow you and your work? You know, and some of your commentary.
Yeah, so
and
my business and AI doings could be found by going to singularitynet.io. And there's a bunch of links from there to various things I'm involved with. My own personal website, Goertzel.org, Goertzel.org, has a whole bunch of other interesting stuff linked from there. You can follow me on Twitter, Ben Goertzel. And there's all sorts of ways everyone can help with effecting the transition to a beneficial singularity. So I look forward to, you know, some of the folks listening now jumping into some of the initiatives in the Singularity Net ecosystem. And thanks for listening.
And thanks for being on the show, Ben. Really appreciate it.
All right. That's good.